राधामदाभ कुंज विहारे कुंज विहारे गोपी जन भालाभ गिरिभर धारे गोपी जन भालाभ गिरिभर जैया गोपी जन भालाभ गिरिभर धारे यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीर वनचारी जमुना तीरा बनचारे जैया राधा माधव कुंज विहारे जैया राधा माधव कुंज विहारे गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिभर धारे जैया गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिभर धारे यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीर वनचारे जमुना तीर वनचारे माधव कुंज विहारे जैया राधा माधव कुंज विहारे
विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज गचार्याष्टोत्तर शत शिष्यमाधि डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय। ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज गचार्याष्टोत्तर शत शिष्यमाधि डिवाइन ग्रेस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज शिल प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य शिल प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथ राशि मम भागवत की Itai Gaura Premanandi. Oh, glory to the assembled devotees. Oh, glory to the assembled devotees. Oh, glory to the assembled devotees. Oh, glory to Shishiguru and Shigauranga.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're coming to the end of the chapter entitled The Lord Begs Charity from Bali Maharaj. And scheduled for me was text 42 and 43, but I believe that yesterday we did text 40, so it means that text 41 hasn't been read. we can come to that. I'll just read text 41. And then we can chant responsively text 42. So, correct, it'll complete the chapter. So indeed we're coming to an end. So I'll just read the translation of text 41. The utterance of the word Om signifies separation from one's monetary assets. In other words, by uttering this word, one becomes free from attachment to money because his money is taken away from him. To be without money is not very satisfactory, for in that position one cannot fulfill one's desires. In other words, by using the word Om, one becomes poverty-stricken. Especially when one gives charity to a poor man or beggar, one remains unfulfilled in self-realization and in sense gratification. purport. Maharaj Bali wanted to give everything to Vamanadev, who had appeared as a beggar, but Sukracharya, being Maharaj Bali's familial spiritual master in the line of seminal succession, could not appreciate Maharaj Bali's position, promise. Sukracharya gave Vedic evidence that one should not give everything to a poor man. Rather, when a poor man comes for charity, one should untruthfully say, "Whatever I have given you, I have no more." It is not that one should give everything to him. Actually, the word Om is meant for Om Tat Sat, the absolute truth. Omkara is meant for freedom from all attachments to money, because money should be spent for the purpose of the Supreme. The tendency of modern civilization is to give money to charity, to the poor. Such charity has no spiritual value because we actually see that although there are so many hospitals and other foundations and institutions for the poor, according to the three modes of material nature, a class of poor men is always destined to continue. Even though there are so many charitable institutions, poverty has not been driven from human society. Therefore, it is recommended here, Bhiksha ve sarvam om karvan nalam Kamena Chamane. One should not give everything to the beggars among the poor. The best solution is that of the Krishna consciousness movement. This movement is always kind to the poor, not only because it feeds them, but also because it gives them enlightenment by teaching them how to become Krishna conscious. We are therefore spending opening hundreds and thousands of centers for those who are poor, both in money and in knowledge, to enlighten them in Krishna consciousness and reform their character by teaching them how to avoid illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling, which are the most sinful activities and which cause people to suffer life after life. The best way to use money is to open such a center where all may come, live and reform their character. They may live very comfortably without denial of any of the body's necessities, but they live under spiritual control And thus they live happily and save time for advancement in Krishna consciousness. If one has money, it should not be squandered away on nothing. It should be used to push forward the Krishna consciousness movement so that all of human society will become happy, prosperous, and hopeful of being promoted back home, back to Godhead. The Vedic mantra in this regard reads as follows. Parikva etad riktam aksharam yat etat om iti tat yat kinshit om iti patraivam smas mai tat richate sayat saram om karyat ruchyat atmanam sa kamegyo nalam syat. And this brings us to text 42, which is the text that we'll be chanting responsively. Text 42. Atayat purnam abhyatman yakshaneti mirtam vachaham sarvam neti anritam bruyat na duskriti svashan nirtaha ataitat purnam abhyatmam yakcha neti nirtam vachaham sarvam neti amritam bruyat na duskriti svasan mirtaham ataitat purnam abhyatmam yakcha neti anritam vachaham sarvam neti anritam tambruyat naduskriti svashan mritaham. Please chant. Taitat purnam abhyatmam yakcha neti amritam vacham sarvam neti anutam bruyat nanad skriti svashan mritaham ataitat purnam abhyatmam chaneti amritam vacham sarvam neti amritam bruyat na duskriti svashan mritaham ataitat purnam abhyatmam yakshaneti amritam vacham sarvam neti anritam bruyat na duskriti svashan mritaham ataitat purnam abhyatmam akchaneti anritam vacham sarvam neti anritam bruyat na duskriti svashan mritaham ataitat purnam abhyatmam yakcha neti amritam vacha sarvam neti amritam bruyat na duskriti svasan mritam Okay. So the word for word for text 42, atta, therefore, etat, that, purnam, completely, abhyatmam, drawing the compassion of others by presenting oneself as always poverty-stricken. Yat, that. Cha, also. Na, not. Iti, this. Das. Anritam, false. Vacha, words. Sarvam, completely. Na, not. He, iti, sorry. Iti, thus. Anritam, falsely. Bruyat, who should say? Saha, such a person. Duskritihi, infamous. Svashan, while breathing or while alive. Mrita, is dead or should be killed. Okay, so the purport of text 42, or the translation by Srila Prabhupada and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, the safe course is to say no. Although it is a falsehood, it protects one completely. It draws the compassion of others towards oneself, and it gives one full facility to collect money from others for oneself. Nonetheless, if one always pleads that he has nothing, he is condemned, for he is a dead body while living, or while still breathing, he should be killed. Purport. Beggars always present themselves as possessing nothing, and this may be very good for them, because in this way they are assured of not losing their money and of always drawing the attention and compassion of others for the sake of collection. But this is also condemned. If one purposely continues this professional begging, he is supposed to be dead while breathing. Or, according to another interpretation, such a man of falsity should be killed while still breathing. The Vedic injunction in this regard is as follows. Athaitat purnam abhyatmam yan neti sayat sarvam neti bruyat. Papikasya kirtir sainam tatraiva hanyat. If one continuously poses himself as possessing nothing and collects money by begging, he should be killed. sainam tatraiva hanyat. And then text 43, which is the concluding verse for this chapter. Srishu narma vivahecha vrityate prapa sankate go brahmanarte hinasyam, sorry, nanritam syaj yugupsitam. And the translation for text 43, in flattering a woman to bring her under control, in joking, in a marriage ceremony, in earning one's livelihood, when one's life is in danger, in protecting cows and Brahminical culture, or in protecting a person from an enemy's hand, falsity is never condemned. Om Gyanatimarandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimata Ramapada Swami Iti Namine Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimata Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Panchakalpa Taribhyascha Kripa Sandubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha. This section that is closing this chapter is Sukracharya reaching a conclusion. And it's a conclusion to the argument that he presented to Bali Maharaj. And his argument was specifically to support the view that he was holding that Bali Maharaj should not be giving everything to Lord Vamanadev. And his whole argument rested on a technical detail. And that technical detail is coming from the Bhajvrita Shruti, which says the following: a promise is truthful if preceded by the word om, and untruthful if it is not. The promise that Bali Maharaj had made to Vamanadev was to give everything in charity. And if he were to have used the word om, then it would be truthful, his statement that he would be naturally fulfilling that promise to give all in his possession in charity to Bali Maharaj. If he used the word om prior to making that statement to Bali Maharaj, there would also have been a specific effect on his consciousness. And that effect on his consciousness would have been that he would have been separated from his attachment to his money. So the usage of the word om is pretty powerful, because it's both cutting the attachment, and it's also making a promise be completely truthful. It's written in stone. There's no going back on it. So Sukracharya, he's looking at what would be the result were Bali Maharaj to have used the word om prior to his making his promise to Lord Vamanadev that he could take anything he wished in charity. Sukracharya presents this argument. So the uttering of the word om would put Bali Maharaj in a position of having no money. So for him, he says, you will become poverty stricken. So it's interesting to pause at this moment, because he's taking a particular statement from this Shruti, and he's wanting to give an opening to Bali Maharaj to not have to fulfill his promise to give everything to Lord Vamanadev. But on the other hand, he's having trouble with the very thing he's recommending, because his understanding is that that cutting of attachment to money would actually be a problem, because now it would put Bali Maharaj in a poverty-stricken condition. So he then sees another problem. This is Sukracharya. The problem he sees is that the person who's going to be the recipient of the charity is also a beggar. So he's presenting his argument of why Bali Maharaj should not be giving charity to Vamanadev. So here is the one that is perhaps the most significant one for him. So naturally he's isolating certain things in order to protect the position he's holding that the charity shouldn't be given. So Sukracharya's evidence for why charity shouldn't be given to a poor man is that self-realization doesn't happen from giving that charity, and also that it's not even gratifying to the senses. This is Sukracharya. So Sukracharya's understanding that the reason charity shouldn't be given where there isn't self-realization or there isn't even a gratification of the senses is something we can look at a little bit more closely. So Srila Prabhupada, he states that the reason charity is given is for purification of the heart. That's the reason for giving charity. And this would be in line with self-realization, because purification of the heart means purification in terms of one's understanding of one's connection with Krishna and that relationship. And also, Srila Prabhupada, and this is coming, I'm drawing from a purport from Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter in the 6th verse. He's points to the fact that actually charity has to be given to suitable persons, because this is what allows one to advance in spiritual life. I mean, there has to be, charity has to be given within the proper system for the system that's allowing for self-realization to happen. So naturally, there's a recommendation of who the proper person is to be giving charity to allow for one to advance in spiritual life. So if one were to examine, because this is a pivotal point in Sukracharya's argument of improper person is going to be receiving charity. So if we look at what's proper and improper giving of charity, we can right away look at who's the suitable person or who are the suitable persons who are fit recipients of charity. So such persons are specifically the brahmanas and the sannyasis, specifically, because they've got an authorization to accept the charity. So it requires being authorized also to receive charity. It cannot be that a person presents themselves as needing charity. That's not actually the qualification for receiving charity. The qualification for charity is being authorized to receive charity. So it has to be within the proper system. So the reason that brahmanas are fit recipients of charity is specifically, society is accustomed to seeing brahmanas at the time of events, life events that are part of the fabric of their lives. That's when a brahmana gets involved in the regular person's life. And so the persons will see brahmanas at the time when there's a birth of a child, or when there's a death in the family, when there's a marriage, So those life-changing moments are when a Brahmana is suddenly present in a person's life. So those Brahmanas are present at those times because they're actually performing a service to the entire society. And the service they're performing is the samskara. So they are actually the authorized persons to elevate the consciousness of the members of society at those crucial junctures in their life where there's some change, a major change. So they're performing a service that's bringing about well-being for the whole of society. And this is because they're performing these purificatory processes. There's another reason that Brahmanas are specifically deserving of charity, and that's because they're actually devoting their entire lives to the well-being of society. This is actually the role of the Brahmana. And they do this by taking knowledge from the Vedas and disseminating it throughout society. So that's the role of a Brahmana. It's a life devoted to seeing to the well-being of the whole of society. There's an old publication by Hrishikesh Swami that's called Varnashram Manifesto. And he spells it out a little bit in more detail, the role of the Brahmana in society. And it was of interest to me because it's something one finds as one's growing in one's Krishna consciousness to expand one's role and understand how one can make a better contribution to society. So this is what he lists in his writings, that Brahmanas are the teachers of all branches of knowledge. So the Brahmana may know every branch of the Vedas. So a Brahmana may be familiar with the Ayurvedic portion of the Vedas, or a Brahmana may be familiar with the architectural portion of the Vedas. So, and the Brahmana is in a position to be able to teach that knowledge. And also, and this is recently Subal was sharing a thought with me for something of how the contribution of this particular temple could shape itself, and it very much fits into the role of Brahmanas in society. So what a Brahmana is doing is teaching the youth in both the primary and secondary schools. So this is actually the role of a Brahmana. So that's a component that I'm very interested in, and at the present time I'm giving attention to see how it may be possible for that to come about in this particular setting. They also teach students where Vanashram universities have been set up. So it's at every phase in a person's life, from very young all the way to getting through university, it's the Brahmana who's teaching. And they're also training future Brahmanas, you could say, in different departments of knowledge. So I had the personal experience, and I found it very fascinating where you actually are dealing with a young person. So maybe in the juncture of going to secondary school and teaching one particular branch of knowledge. So What I found was it's when one's already dealing with a child that's been trained by brahmanas from very early on, the child completely grasps the subject matter perfectly and actually then puts it into practice. I personally witnessed this and I thought, this is extraordinary. You know, one cannot actually put a child that has had that kind of careful training by brahmanas throughout his life into like just a regular materialistic setting. It's a complete waste from this point of view, that the purity and strength of the child is such that the intelligence completely takes in the subject matter and can apply it unhesitatingly. It's not a child that has to go home and write homework to sort of try and thud it into the material brain, and there's no interest, nothing like that. It's like fully understanding the subject matter, fully applying it. So so in effect, the brahmanas are guiding and educating society. And their responsibility doesn't rest just with training brahmanas. So I've had the experience, as I mentioned, of, you know, training a little brahminical child, you know, in one branch of knowledge. Actually, brahmanas are also supposed to train the government leaders. So and this is the proper function. There should be that kind of relationship that exists between the brahmanas and the persons in the ruling position in society. So what they're doing with the leaders is brahmanas are training them how to administer and protect society. So it's clearly the protective component is a major contribution on the part of the brahmanas, because one sees, we're living in this microcosmic setting where we're discussing these topics, and then outside in the world, the broader structure is such where there isn't the consultation with the brahmanas, and so the protective component for society is absent. I mean, one can witness it very, very clearly, constantly. Where inevitably there's whole sections of society that are not being properly cared for, whether it's, you know, cows, or whether it's they often refer to the elderly and try to make arrangements for the elderly, but basically protection for all members of society, including unborn individuals or conceived individuals that aren't yet born. Every element of society needs to be protected. And so the brahmana gives the training, because the brahmana is drawing from Vedic knowledge, so therefore can actually properly help the leader to understand why inbuilt in their administration has to be the protective component. Now, they can also work with different members of the social order, and this includes also the Vaishyas and the Sudras. the Brahmana helps to develop the particular qualities so that those individuals can move forward in executing their particular duties. And so I have the experience regularly, because I'm working with children, is it becomes very clear that a particular child has a very strong brahminical or qualities that are pretty brahminical, and then another child may have qualities that are, you know, stronger on the Vaishya side. So one always, as the person in the educational position, is trying to help the child to develop the qualities that they've been gifted with. And so it enhances their future time of being able to perform their particular duties in a very excellent way. So these are the roles of the Brahmana. Now, the improper giving of charity would be to give charity that it's unproductive, or it's just given blindly. So I had a situation recently. I'm with a devotee in a train, and naturally there's a stream almost of different beggars passing through and requesting some assistance, some monetary. It's always specified. It has to be monetary. That's what's required. And anyway, one of the persons passing through was a blind man. And in the country where I grew up, everybody was trained to give to blind persons. It was just part, I think it's part of the African culture. So there's always a child leading a blind person and to wherever they can look for charity. So it's just one's trained. So it's instinctive. One immediately something is given. And anyway, of course, there's this thing that there's some blind giving because, you know, as one's handing over, one becomes aware, there's a slight alcohol smell, yes, but the person has a disability. So anyway, it's considered unproductive. Charity shouldn't be given where it's unproductive. So in that case, there's some protection because the person clearly has a disability, and so it's not that the person's in full charge of their capacity. Now, Sukracharya, he's pointing to this giving of charity to a beggar or a poor man, and he's basically seen it as unproductive. You know, what is going to result from that? And and Srila Prabhupada says too that some wretched poor fellow can't actually even receive very generous charity. The person is sort of impoverished mentally, or their situation is so impoverished that even if charity was to be very munificent, that person wouldn't be able to receive it properly. So so the kinds of charity that are considered to be, you know, generous, munificent charity, it's enumerated. There's a verse where King Yudhisthira is describing what charity he gives. So I looked at a king, because here we're dealing with Bali Maharaj. So this is what the verse says. Upon the birth of a son, the king, who knew how, where, and when charity should be given, so it presupposes this knowledge of the proper way to give charity, he gave gold, land, villages, elephants, horses, and good food grains to the brahmanas. So that's munificent charity, and that's from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in the 12th chapter. So the king in this particular verse is Maharaj Yudhisthira. And in fact, he was so absorbed in the activities or in the service of Lord Krishna that actually nothing could satisfy him except that service. So this is that king and how he's dealing with the giving of charity. So even in his daily morning duties, so he's a king, so you can take it as a grahasta or a householder. And this is what he would do. He would pray, particularly to the household deities. He's offering a fire sacrifice to the sun god, so very elaborate. He's offering obeisances. He's offering grains, and this is on a daily basis, grains, cows, land, and gold to the brahmanas. So on a daily basis, the king actually has that task. So on a daily basis, something from the treasury is going to the brahmanas. First thing in the morning, it's part of his duties. There's no choice about it. And one can understand that it's very happily done because there's an understanding of the role that brahmanas have in society. Now we have Sukracharya, who's advising Bali Maharaj, and that's the verse that was just a sort of in-between verse that wasn't scheduled. He's advising him to say no for giving charity to a dwarf brahmachari brahmana. So he's saying, no, don't give it. And now taking into account that, you know, kings naturally understand how charity is supposed to be given and when it's supposed to be given and how it's supposed to be given, because they've had their training. Just as the brahmana is training the child from very early on, the king's had their training. There's no doubt in a king's mind of what their duty is, none whatsoever. And Sukracharya here is actually advising, no, don't give charity. So you can see there's it's a problematic moment. And he's also saying, say no, even though you promise to do so. So not only is he doing it, he's not doing it in advance of the matter. The king has already said, I will give you whatever you desire. Take whatever you desire. And Sukracharya is saying to him, even if you've promised, no. We'll use this technical detail from the Shrutis of how, you know, you can actually avoid giving it. So, and you could say that Sukracharya had a deep concern. And the deep concern was that actually Bali Maharaj would not be able to keep his promise. So he says, you have promised to give him 3 steps of land in charity, but when you give it, he will occupy the 3 worlds. So that sounds good, but here's his personal view coming in. This, he's talking to the king. You are a rascal, or Bali Maharaj. You do not know what a great mistake you have made. After giving everything to Lord Vishnu, you will have no means of livelihood. So he's looking at what he believes will be the personal effect on Bali Maharaj of giving charity. So, poverty stricken, no money, no livelihood. This will be the result of giving everything away. So, this is how he's advising Bali Maharaj. and so, what is that livelihood that Sukracharya is saying that Bali Maharaj will have to give up, or the livelihood he won't have? What's the livelihood of a king or a householder king? Is rise early, bathe, offer respects to the deity, do the various prayers for the deity, and then give charity to the brahmanas. So this would be the missing component. He now is not able to complete his livelihood because he doesn't have anything to give. So this is Sukracharya's argument. He won't be able to complete his livelihood. He can do the other part, but how is he going to give to the brahmanas if he now has nothing? So gone will be his land. He won't have any more to give if Lord Vamanadeva's taken everything. And with the land go the cows and the grains, because that's all part of the land. So you give the land, you're giving away the cows too. You're giving the grains away too. So, I mean, you can't like, you know, remove the grains and give the land, or remove the cows and give the land. It goes together. So, so this is the conclusion that Sukracharya reaches. The safe course is to say no. This is his conclusion. Now, if one were to examine what does it actually mean having material wealth or having opulences, actually they can't really be considered as possessions. Rather, they can be considered as things that cause difficulties and complexity. So, Sukracharya is looking at it from one point of view. They're possessions. So you part with your possessions, there's nothing. But from a spiritual perspective, or at least from the bhakti perspective, they're actually seen as things that are creating complexity. And that's part of the reason for needing to give the charity. It's actually taking away a lot of the complexity. then, from the bhakti perspective, what's actually the another form of wealth? Or what's the wealth that is considered real wealth? not the wealth that's, you know, causing all the difficulties and complexities to happen. And that's the wealth of the deities, or the wealth of Radha and Krishna, or in Bali Maharaj's case, it's actually the wealth of the lotus feet of Lord Vamanadev. So it's a different kind of wealth. And to sort of put an emphasis on this point that actually the real wealth is the lotus feet of one's worshipable deities, or from Bali Maharaj, it's to be Lord Vamanadev. I found this prayer of Narottam Das Thakur, who's emphasizing what he considers to be real riches. And I'm going to read the translation first and then the Bengali. My real riches are Nityananda Prabhu and the lotus feet of Radha Krishna. O Lord, kindly give me this opulence. I do not want anything but your lotus feet as my property. So this is that kind of property gives freedom. The other is giving complexity. So I'll just read the Bengali. Dana Mora Nityananda Radha Krishna Sri Charana Se Mora Pranadana. Now, the reason that this wealth of the lotus feet of the deities, or Radha Krishna, is such an important kind of wealth is that it gives the worshipper the eye of transcendental knowledge. And this can be contrasted with the blindness, actually, of having ordinary assets. In the same way that, say, Lord Vamanadev, Lord Krishna, they're very detached observers of the material creation. The person who's worshipping Lord Krishna or Lord Vamanadev also becomes aloof from the interaction that's going on in the material creation, or aloof from the material energies. And we know that this aloofness starts to happen because Krishna explains it even like in graphic detail. Because he says, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. So it would seem that it's almost as though Krishna's talking about something that Sukracharya was saying, that actually when you lose that material wealth, you're going to start going through one distress after another. It sounds like that. But he said that it's actually favoring the person. If he's favoring someone, he'll actually start removing that wealth. So this gives us a clue also of the position of Bali Maharaj, that he must be greatly favored. So now to look at why it seems like distress is going to be happening to the devotee. Now, in regular material distress and happiness, this is coming from karma. So one's own action has then brought about some situation that is either giving one's happiness, or it's brought about a situation that's bringing about a lot of distress. So all those previous activities are now manifesting in some sort of arrangement for oneself. And every time one is in such a situation where it's, a karmic arrangement, there's a residue that happens just from having gone through that situation. Means that a seed has been planted for some future entanglement. So let's say one gets enjoyment in a particular way, and the fact that one is viewing, say, even it could be a sinful thing as enjoyment, it's coming from, you know, previous activities of that nature. So the situation is created where one is experiencing what one perceives as some happiness, but then just by engaging in it that way, the seed is planted for a future time where one will actually have to engage in that activity. And inevitably we know that something that's where there's appears to be happiness, there's immediately distress following because it's a material thing. So it means in the future, again, one will get some such situation with a bigger amount of distress. It plants the seed for wanting that again. So, and it's not necessarily that one's always learnt that, oh, this distress is because of these activities in this situation. So there's that residue that comes from that kind of material happiness or material distress. Now, this is different to the distress that Lord Krishna was describing, which is why I wanted to comment on this, because Sukracharya is talking about the distress, the poverty-stricken state that's going to come about for Bali Maharaj. The distress, actually, that's generated from the desires of the Lord, it actually leaves no trace after the immediate purpose of the Lord has been served. So one may go through something that appears very distressful, like perhaps one is now struggling desperately with, what example could I use? let me think. Struggling. One is taking in, as a person who is trying to get that great wealth of the lotus feet of the Lord, but then the Lord has arranged some situation where actually there's distress. Maybe one has had something taken away, something that was dear to one. Like, okay, I'll use myself as an example. That's always very safe. Okay, so let's say through living life as a householder, there was an area that, money in this, there can be a budgeting that in this category, money can be used for, purchasing clothing. So the thing that's happened after many years of going through that, and, you know, very enthusiastically doing it, I might add, there's a time has come where that surge of excitement is not there anymore. So then I'm understanding that actually somehow the arrangement has been made by Lord Krishna that desire has subsided. And I've examined it and thought, oh, I'm not feeling excitement. And it seems maybe it's a bit of a pity. Because that was an interesting area of excitement. Oh, all right. So, but it means that I'm not going to be walking into the future carrying some unhappiness that I've lost that desire for wanting to purchase clothing. It's fine. I understand the desire's died. I can drop it and move on. So... So this is the beauty of some arrangement by Lord Krishna. There's no residue. It's very clean cut. It's happened. One's not carrying, you know, distressed feelings. It's complete. One's satisfied and moves on. So this is something of the difference of what supposedly appears as distress when it's the Lord's arrangement. It's... generally, the removal of something that is beneficial, and it allows one to move forward in a free way without that additional, carrying something additional feelings related to nurturing desires. It's left behind, so one is more free. So now Sukracharya is predicting poverty for Bali Maharaj. if he agrees to fulfill the desires of Lord Vamanadev. Naturally, because I'm looking at this particular thing and I have the bias of a devotee, I thought, well, if one were to meet Sukracharya's argument head on about being poverty stricken, I found a very nice quote. It's from Prabodhanandana Saraswati Thakur from the Adi Leela in the 13th chapter. He says, "A person who doesn't take advantage of the nectar of devotional service flowing, and in his case, during the presence of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult, is certainly the poorest of the poor." So the implication is taking advantage of something of the nectar of devotional service, that exchange with Lord Krishna or for Bali Maharaj, Lord Vamanadev, is... obviously taking him very distant from that picture of being poverty stricken. Very distant. In fact, it's were he not to engage in that, he would fall into this category of being the poorest of the poor. So the emphasis is on the connection with the relationship. And now, what is that great wealth that's actually gained? Is if one's actually looking to get as one's possession the lotus feet of Lord Krishna or Srimati Radharani, actually the wealth is that one comes to understand Krishna and Srimati Radharani as a subtle manifestation of spirit. So it's outside the material realm. And as also having a transcendental existence that doesn't end. So in this way, the wealth that's gained is realizing the supreme truth as the foundation of one's existence. Foundation of one's existence, not that one's existence is going to be dependent on those external material assets or the money that one can use to acquire, but rather just through understanding that they're the manifestation of spirit and that they're transcendentally existent, helps one to see them as the foundation of one's existence. And so this, of course, is freeing one from that whole cycle of suffering. The second, or the verse that was on the board, Sukracharya gives an analysis of a beggar. And he says that a beggar is presenting himself, so it's an external presentation of not possessing anything. And so that naturally arouses the compassion of others and the attention of others. But a problem becomes where the person starts to take it on as a profession. Because in that case, the person is continuing with making it the external show of not having anything, but the person has collected things. So it's not true anymore. So the person cannot make it a profession that they're a beggar, because according to this particular quote that's given here, such a person is actually dead while they're breathing. Means that they're not actually performing any of the duties they're supposed to be performing, so they can be considered to be dead, even though they're breathing. Because they're physically walking dead, then the particular injunction that was mentioned here was that they could even be killed by virtue of the fact that they are dead. So, just on the point of actually the giving of charity, it's something that should never be stopped. And Krishna mentions this. He says, acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls. That's Jnana Dana Tapa Karma Na Chyaja Karyam Eva Tat Yagna Danam Tapas Chaiva Prananani Manishinam. There's no question of no, say no to charity. That was Sukracharya's, say no to the charity. And Krishna's saying it can never not be performed. It has to be performed. So there's no choice actually for Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj is in a situation where there's a suitable person, Brahmana. He's already been trained, knowing who to give to, when and how, and he has to do it in order to advance in spiritual life. So those are some thoughts on where we'd come to here. I think Giridhari Prabhu had his hand, and then you can go next to myself.
I have a few thoughts. The advice of Sukracharya to Bali Maharaj reminds me of a few circumstances where people have advised me not to take to Krishna consciousness. Like right before I moved into the temple full time, one of my best friends called me like super seriously and like super sincerely. He was like, I just really don't think you should go to the temple. Like, I really don't think it's good for you. Like, he was like very serious, and he was going off on like a rant, and I just like hung up the phone on him. Just like while he was speaking to me, I just was like, doop. Didn't call him back for like a long time. And then also just like the last time I visited my mom, she's always trying to get me to do something normal, like get back into like a career mode or something like that, going back to school. So like she dropped me off at the library because she had to go back to work for the day after picking me up at the airport, and then she was like, find some good books in there. She's like, I was like, I'm okay, I have my own books. And then she's like, well, read something else. And I was like, no, thank you. And then I walked out. She was advising me. She wanted me to find some different topic to study other than Krishna consciousness. Just in sharing that. And also, I was one kind of common question too is this verse of like not becoming a beggar. It seems very like synonymous with Bhagavad Gita, like where Krishna is telling Arjuna, like you can't become a beggar, and like you have to do your duty. Just like maybe if you have any comments on that.
So Giridhari Prabhu gave two examples from his personal life of receiving advice that he saw as very much in accord with Sukracharya's position because it's advice that was asking him to look outside of the bhakti process or Krishna consciousness for being relatable to again. And the question that Giridhari brought up was this mention of Sukracharya of not giving to a beggar. He was remembering Krishna advising Arjuna not to become a beggar and to perform his duty. So he was asking if there's any comment on that. Yes, the whole, like your mother, your friend, they are not cognizant of one important component in the life you've chosen at this time, and that is that actually you're performing a duty. So the idea that one should not have settled into performing activities of devotional service is also basically advising someone not to perform their duty. And this, just taking into account the pivotal role that thinking intellectual persons carrying in their heart's devotion for Lord Krishna that they're performing in society is possible because of the training and education they're receiving in order to know how to perform their duty or to be really well equipped to perform their duties for society. So Arjuna had the conflict of, again, what appeared important on a material level, you know, the being put in a position where one was actually going to devastate and wipe out many men from the opposing armies, he thought, oh, it's going to cause a problem in society. It's going to be, you know, unwanted progeny because now women aren't protected. Or he saw that actually, on a material level, he has a relationship with somebody on the other side. That person was his teacher. But now he's actually having to remove the physical body of his teacher. So there were some conflicts. And what he needed was a reminder of What is his duty? So Krishna's taking the role of the brahmana, or this carrier of the knower of all the Vedas. So he's advising, actually, your duty is an administrative person. So as an administrative person, you actually have to fight this particular war. It's part of your duty. And and also how to do it is focusing on, you know, the goal is attaining the lotus feet of Krishna always, so you're performing it in devotion to Krishna. So it's got a higher purpose. So the persons who are reposing, one being in the temple or one's reading material, are not understanding the higher purpose of everything that's been done as well. So we'll see how Bali Maharaj responds to Sukracharya, because it's very educative, because he has all the detachment of being able to actually say the truth, acknowledge the person's concerns, or he acknowledged Sukracharya's concern, he acknowledged the knowledge he was presenting, but then he raised his own argument of what he considered important. And that is similar to, I think, how one has to tackle anybody who's in opposition to one or not understanding. One has to, in a detached manner, you know, present what it is that the role that one is taking right now and what the role one sees for one's future life, and how it plays itself out through studying or residing in a temple. So, and it's very valid to actually hear the persons and also acknowledge and then help with their understanding in whatever limited way, but a little bit, because that is one's duty. One's duty is to educate persons. So one can actually take that bold step of educating. So so one can welcome those opportunities. It sharpens one's intellect to have to see how one can order one's understanding and present it in a way that the persons can in some way get a new angle of vision on one's activities. So, yeah. Thank you.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you for the class. Very nice class. I just kind of have a question about Sukracharya's consciousness, or just like, because it seems that Bali Maharaj is in the correct position. Like, the right thing to do is give Vamanadev charity. But Sukracharya seems to be completely bewildered. It seems of self-interest and like just completely on the material platform, and he's not taking account of Vamanadev's transcendental position. And like there's no comparison to like the material aspect of it. Like, it's completely out of this world. But so like, is that the case? Like Sukracharya is just like not in the right consciousness, or he's pretty bewildered. Is that what's going on?
So the question is Sukracharya pretty bewildered because he's neither acknowledging the transcendental position of Lord Vamanadev, and neither is he perhaps fully understanding the situation in general. Sukracharya as a brahmana is the recipient of charity. So he's the recipient of charity. It's mentioned that he's like the family brahmana. So it's a common practice for persons. Sometimes you'll see even children will have a Brahminical thread because the family has a spiritual master or a brahmana that kind of sees to the performance of those purificatory processes in all the life-changing events. So Sukracharya was in that position in relation to Bali Maharaj. And he's the recipient of charity from Bali Maharaj. So he's performing his duty of advising Bali Maharaj. That's his duty. And the problem comes to be, and you pointed it out, there appears to be some self-interest because his being the recipient of charity is now going to be jeopardized because the source of charity is the king, Bali Maharaj. And so if Bali Maharaj is not able to perform his duty, one of those prime duties being to give land, gold, cows to the brahmanas, means Sukracharya, he is now in a difficult position as he sees it. So it's certainly a very material consideration, certainly, because the, and I think how I understood it, I've sort of mentioned it before, is that he hasn't come to the point of bhakti or devotion to the Lord having awakened in him. He's very much on the knowledge jnana platform. So he, because his devotion to the Supreme Lord hasn't awakened, he's actually quoting something from the scriptures that are technical things. And it's mixed with his view that soon he may be, his position may be compromised. He will not be the recipient of charity. So, yeah. Okay. Oh, it is. I'm surprised. It felt very fast. Oh, Dr. Baladev has to ask a question, please. Oh, all right. We'll do it in person. Okay, we'll do it in person. Thank you very much. Jai Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.